This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 7th of March, 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I introduce our readers for this week, Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And a special visitor for today. This is Eve, who's a reporter at the Hampshire Chronicle, who's stepping in at very short notice. Welcome, Eve.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jackie.
Hello.
Right, and I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So I'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And as you listen to the recordings, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, look at Recording if you want to hear it, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. You can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on Awaz Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. Awaz is on the DAB channel. And you can listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. So, on with our usual headline stories, and there is no doubt in the minds of this week's editors as to what the headlines are. All four of the headline stories concern the report of alleged bullying at Winchester Cathedral. So, Deborah, could you have your first story, please?
Yes, and this one is Dean resigns after review is published. The Dean of Winchester has resigned after a review of the culture and leadership, involving the Cathedral Music Department. The very Reverend Catherine Ogle, the Dean since 2017, stepped down after the publication of a report following an investigation that interviewed or heard from nearly 200 people. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mountstephen, ordered the review after controversy sparked by the resignation last year of Andrew Lumsden, the Director of Music.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, could you have your continuation of the story, please?
This one is senior figure hits at failings. A senior figure at Winchester Cathedral has revealed the frustration which led him to quit, endorsing a review into the reports of bullying that have plunged it into crisis. In a statement released to the Chronicle, Mark Byford, who is the senior non-executive member of the chapter until he resigned in June, has said the Cathedral should have reacted more quickly and decisively to the allegations of bad behaviour. The review published yesterday, March 3rd, the same day Dean of Winchester, Catherine Ogle, resigned, highlighted the culture of secrecy, which it says prevented non-executive members of chapter from confronting the crisis in the music department. Mr. Byford also expresses his desire to continue his involvement with the Cathedral and his hopes that the issues highlighted by the review will be resolved. His statement in full is follows: I welcome the review findings and recommendations, as well as Bishop Philip's clear accompanying statement. I trust that the recommendations will be implemented effectively and speedily to enable the Cathedral to flourish in the future and move forward with confidence and greater openness. When I decided to stand down from chapter as its senator, non-executive member, last June, I stated that my decision was taken with both deep reluctance and disappointment. At the time, I felt the cathedral was making insufficient progress in communicating appropriately and with sufficient speed in regard to the unfolding crisis. Moreover, I felt the cathedral needed to highlight with greater emphasis in its tolerance of any poor behaviours set in the context of its declared values. Importantly, on a number of occasions, as the senior non-executive member of the chapter, I also felt insufficiently informed, along with my non-executive colleagues, about decisions that had been taken already, which I'd felt had a serious impact on proper governance and collective accountability. Although I have left chapter, I hope to retain a warm and close relationship with the cathedral in the future, attending services and events on a regular basis. I have every confidence in Rolly Ream as interim dean and in chapter taking forward the review recommendations with drive and diligence, and I wish them well.
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
Yes, so under the banner of crisis at the cathedral, I have the same story. Dean steps down after criticism in crisis review. The Dean of Winchester has stepped down after a review into bullying criticised her for leading the cathedral into a period of crisis. The review, overseen by the Bishop of Winchester, was sparked by controversy over the management style of members of the cathedral chapter over its choral music. It was released on Monday the 3rd of March and follows the departure of the head of music, Dr. Andrew Lumsden, last year. Dean Catherine is relinquishing the role 2 months earlier than had been announced last year. There is no question that the Dean has been accused of bullying. The review, which was conducted by lawyer Patty Russell and the Very Reverend Jane Hedges, interviewed 47 people and considered 140 submissions. In a summary of the report, the reviewers said they immediately encountered stress and in some cases extreme pain at what had happened to the institution, to themselves and to other individuals caught up in the fallout. They say the leadership team at the cathedral made mistakes through misunderstandings, poor judgment, inadequate advice, organisational culture, and some simply due to individual personalities. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Philip Mount Stephen, said, "I'm most grateful to the reviewers for the very thorough work they have undertaken. Whilst they have identified some significant failings in leadership and management that led the cathedral into a period of crisis, a crisis only deepened by a hostile social media campaign, they also identified much to celebrate. Their recommendations to chapter are clear, full and very helpful, and I look forward to seeing them implemented in the months to come." As previously reported, Dean Catherine Ogle was due to step down on May the 1st after holding the position for 8 years. However, she will leave immediately, being replaced in the interim by Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream. Dean Catherine said, "Following receipt of the Bishop's review, Chapter welcomes its conclusions and is fully committed to implementing the review recommendations, many of which are already underway. However, after careful consideration, I have, with Chapter's agreement, decided I should hand over leadership responsibilities to Vice Dean Canon Rowley now, rather than waiting for my official retirement on May the 1st. On behalf of Chapter, I would like to say sorry to everyone who has been hurt by the events of the last few months, and although we must accept collective responsibility, I have decided, as its leader, to step aside now. There is a lot of work to be done in the coming weeks and months, so it makes sense that as interim dean, Rowley can get things moving forward straight away. I will use the time to complete the handover of duties to make sure there is a smooth transition before I officially retire. Despite recent difficulties, I will always treasure my time as Dean of Winchester and assure the cathedral community of my prayers as the search for my successor gets underway. I'm now looking forward to spending time with as many people as possible in the cathedral and wider community before marking my official farewell. Interim Dean Canon Roland Ream said, I accept the role of Interim Dean at this juncture with mixed feelings, knowing that I'm following a transformative, much-loved leader and a great ambassador for the cathedral. On the other hand, I embrace the challenge of leading Chapter's efforts in the next months to respond to the recommendations of the review positively and generously, so that we can prepare the way for the leadership of a new dean.
Thank you, Jackie. The last piece, obviously on the same subject, talks a little more detail about the review itself. It's headed Review Notes, Culture of Secrecy Within Institution. A review into the events which led to Andrew Lumsden's departure from Winchester Cathedral amid accusations of bullying has noted a culture of secrecy within the walls of the institution. On Monday, March the 3rd, the news broke that the Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend Catherine Ogle, had stepped down after being accused of leading the cathedral into a period of crisis. The review, commissioned by the Right Reverend Philip Mount Stephen, Bishop of Winchester, was also made public on Monday. It highlights the failures of the cathedral's leadership team, giving reasons for it explicitly cause a crisis. We have been made aware of particularly bad behaviour, the review reads, some between members of staff, some by the media, some by members of the cathedral congregation, and some by people who, in their passion for cathedral music, have misdirected their energies in such a way that paradoxically they have caused further damage to the institution which they love. It also spoke of the angst suffered by those involved in the, inverted commas, as interviewing began, we immediately encountered stress and in some cases extreme pain in what has happened to the institution, to themselves and to other individuals caught up in the fallout. The review did, however, highlight the positive aspects it discovered. Despite all this, it is our strongly held belief that things can be turned around at the cathedral, continued. There are many good people associated with its life, and a large number with whom we spoke voiced their hopes for what will come out of this review and for the future flourishing of the cathedral. As for what caused the crisis, the review highlighted four main reasons. The leadership and management of the cathedral's choirs, to include consideration of recent HR decision-making and communications. The culture and behaviours of the chapter and cathedral, and the extent to which this affects cathedral operations, specifically in relation to the cathedral's choirs. Cathedral decision-making processes, and in particular the processes by which the chapter manages risk and critical issues, and governance structures and the efficacy of leadership at chapter level. The review then details the effect of this culture of secrecy has had on the chapter. Despite their best endeavours, which were significant, the non-executive members of the chapter and Mr. Bark Byford, a senior non-executive member, who worked tirelessly in his role to address the issues of concern, were often not fully in possession of the relevant facts, which prevented them from playing their proper part in addressing the challenges the cathedral faced. Another issue within the cathedral was silo working, exemplified by the hiring of the precentor, Andy Trenier, who felt he could not communicate properly with his colleagues. The precentor was appointed to bring change by delivering a new music strategy, the review said. However, it was not properly communicated or consulted upon. The result identified silo working within the cathedral to be a particular challenge, which meant that the precentor felt he was largely working alone. As well as attempting to explain how the crisis happened, the review made recommendations on how the cathedral might move forward. These stress the need for a culture of change within the cathedral towards radical candor, as recommended in the Church of England safeguarding training, an approach to which both challenges directly and cares personally. This will enable information to be shared appropriately and decisions to be made by the right people based on an adequate assessment of the situation. Right, that finishes our headline stories, and as usual, we now go on to the death notices, starting with Deborah, please.
Braddock, Margaret Elizabeth Braddock, née Sayward, peacefully on the 14th of February at Winchester Hospice, aged 81.
Bristow, Robert Edwin Bristow, peacefully 5th of February at Merrifield Convent Residential Home, Hook, aged 88.
Butler, Maureen Butler, peacefully on the 3rd of February, aged 80.
Dalton, June Barbara Dalton, née Day, peacefully 7th of February at Winchester Hospice, aged 91.
Godfrey, Alan Simon Godfrey, on the 23rd of February, aged 56.
Hayes, Doreen May Hayes, peacefully 13th of February at Basingstoke and Dean Hospital, aged 78.
Holland, Joan Mary Holland, née Hoare, on the 7th of February, aged 77.
Jane, Henry Charles Jane, 15th of February, aged 87.
North, Trevor North, peacefully on the 23rd of February, aged 96.
Oliver, Michael James Oliver, known as Mick, peacefully 10th of February at Winchester Hospice, aged 85.
Phillips, Kenneth Phillips, 24th of February, aged 89.
Power, Michael James Power, peacefully, 3rd of February at Winchester Hospice, aged 74.
Proudfoot, Thomas Simon Proudfoot, at home in Alsford on the 7th of February.
Salter, Jane Salter, peacefully, 14th of February.
Smith, Mary Rose Smith, peacefully on the 27th of February at Winchester Hospice, aged 90.
Sturgis, Mary Sturgis, 23rd of February, aged 92. Well, thank you one and all. Now we go on to Christian comment, read by Jackie, please.
And it's entitled, This Lent, Should We Go on Spiritual MOT? This week was Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent. Traditionally, Lent is understood to be a period of 40 days of preparation for Holy Week, Good Friday and Easter, when we are all invited to reflect on our spiritual lives and our inner life. Perhaps to consider our relationships or our life's priorities. For some, this may mean a spiritual fast, giving up something in order to grow stronger in the face of temptation. For some, it may mean taking on extra acts of kindness, perhaps a Lent Bible study, or spending extra time in prayer or personal reflection. What I try to do during Lent is to make sure I undergo a spiritual MOT. The MOT test, which simply means Ministry of Transport, was introduced in 1960 as an annual check on vehicle safety and roadworthiness. Applying that to myself means reflecting upon the health and safety of my whole person, body, mind, and spirit. Many of us will spend time looking after our bodies, eating healthy, exercising regularly, limiting our indulgences. But most of us also need to take more time to look after our mental health too. And I want to say we also all need to care for our spiritual life, regardless of whether we feel ourselves to be religious or not. I need to consider my output, how and what I say and do. I need to check my roadworthiness. Am I able to stay calm, to stop when I need to? Am I a safe person who others want to be near and know? And of course, that key question that all of us must ask of ourselves in Lent and every day: do I bring out the best in other people and in myself? And that's from the Venerable Andrew V. Doughty, a retired Anglican priest living in Romsey.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go on to letters to the editor, starting with Deborah, please.
The first one is from from Jill Thurkerson. Shame on them. Shame on those Hampshire County Council who decided to make cuts in provision for some of the most vulnerable in our area, children with disabilities. Challengers is a charity which gives severely disabled children the opportunity to have fun and make friends in a safe, secure and supportive environment. Opportunities for these children are extremely few, in direct contrast to mainstream school children. Out-of-school provision is practically non-existent. A play day at Challengers often equates to one Saturday a term because of the huge demand. The Eastleigh branch, one of two schemes locally, will be closing at the end of summer 2025. To deprive these children even further is quite simply cruel. Such schemes also provide parents with one day a term of much needed respite. Think again, HCC, because this is both heartless and callous. Update: I have just read in the Chronicle, county cuts $4.5 million as 350 staff quit. And from that, HCC is cutting $3.7 million from children's services and adult health and care. Quit reducing the quality of life for those who need it most. Jill Thurkerson, Albany Court, Bishop's Waltham.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, could we have your first letter, please?
Monty Record. May I add a personal note to your interesting article on Field Marshal Montgomery, published in the Chronicle February 27th. Monty was chairman of the Board of Governors of St John's School, Leatherhead, when I was there in the late 50s, early 60s. Possibly he accepted the position as about 50% of the boys were clergy sons and he was himself the son of a bishop. You could always tell when he was down for a governor's meeting, as he would be the only car in the school forecourt. After the meeting, he would lunch with the prefects, although I'm not sure all of us fully appreciated how privileged we were. During his time as chairman, he was responsible for many improvements to the school, and it was believed that many of the funds came from the proceeds of his books, serialised in the Sunday Times. He attended every speech day, bringing down distinguished guests such as Lady Churchill, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and others including General Norstedt, the Supreme Commander of the Allied Powers in Europe, as it then was. Unfortunately, but to the amusement of the boys, at every speech day he used the same speech to such an extent that the boys recited it that they went along word for word. A great man, even if he was not always appreciated by other senior officers or indeed the Prime Minister. David Evans, Horsebridge Road, King's Sunbourne.
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
Closure shock. I'm sure I wasn't the only person to be shocked at reading that Andover Road is to be closed for almost 6 months. It got worse when I deciphered the B numbers and realised the detour route. Into Berwick Road, where there is a large college and several residence parking bays turning the road into a single track. Onto Stockbridge Road and a mini roundabout that serves a school. Then the Chilbolton Avenue roundabout. Onto Week, with another school close by, two busy supermarkets and a doctor's surgery. Finally, up to Harestock Road, queuing to turn right. What could possibly go wrong? To almost quote the Kaiser Chiefs, I predict a gridlock. I predict a gridlock. I'm not sure a great deal of thought has gone into this scheme. The area of gasworks is by the dual carriageway part of Andover Road. Assuming they're only on one side, why can't they turn the other carriageway into a two-way road temporarily? Also, having encountered their workforce in Badger Farm recently, I laughed at their suggestion they will finish in 21 weeks. Round here, they dug holes and then disappeared for a month. And that's from Ted Hart, Maytree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. Who would have thought we'd get you singing the Kaiser Chiefs? Right, I've got a letter here written by Sebastian Delapierre, who is 12 years old. My grandparents are regular readers of the Hampshire Chronicle. I was at their house on February the 27th and noticed something. On the page demonstrating the camera club photos, one of the birds was sadly named incorrectly. As a keen bird watcher, I knew what it should have been, and that is a tufted duck. But it was labelled a little grebe. Well, whether it was your editor's mistake or the photographer's, I don't know, but considering the amount of people reading your papers, I believe many would appreciate such slight corrections. That was written by Sebastian Delapierre of Chalkridge, Highcliffe, Winchester. There actually is a second letter on the same subject. It's a very lengthy letter, so we need to relax a bit. It's written by Norma Goodwin and it's headed Duck Detail. On page 54 of the Hampshire Chronicle of February the 27th, the photo titled Little Grebe is actually a tufted duck. Norma Goodwin, Mumford Road, Oliver's Battery. Deborah, please.
This letter is from Peter Connell, and it's on the subject of the mayoral elections. Even more bureaucracy. I'm not sure it's democratically correct for elections just to be postponed the way they have been. Just arbitrarily delayed a year? Could it be 2, 3, or even 4 years if it didn't suit the incumbent party? And for mayoral reasons, is this to ballot for the concept of mayor of Solent City or for an actual mayor? My guess is for the latter, as we won't get a say on whether we want one or not. Correct me if I'm wrong, but all of the territory marked out, Portsmouth, Southampton, Isle of Wight, etc., for this mayor position seems remarkably similar, identical, to that currently managed by Hampshire County Council, HCC. Some say HCC is a bit of a failed institution. For instance, not corrected the working from home problem, vastly overstaffed, and shedding staff hand over fist with generous redundancy, voluntary payoffs, packages, with no apparent loss of service. Thinking that a 15% hike in annual rates in 2025-6 was a good idea, and even contemplating spending more than £2 million on a ballot to prove that the ratepayers would certainly have vetoed the idea. With a CEO on £237,000, are we getting value for money? And the accolade of having the highest paid executive in the country in 2024, Felicity Rowe, Director of Culture, at £650,000. Then you add in all the other CEOs, for instance, Gosport, £195,000, Fareham, £136,000, Southampton, £200,000, Winchester, £128,000, Isle of Wight, £138,000, etc., etc., all plus national insurance and pensions. I'm unclear if these CEOs stay in post or if the mayoral role cancels them out. My prediction is that we will eventually end up getting a mayor whether we like it or not. That person will be on an even higher salary. The rest of the existing players will benefit from nice redundancy payments and will probably end up re-employed in the same position as current, but under different titles. To satisfy Angela Rayner's big idea, all we would have created is more bureaucracy and an even more expensive top layer. That said, if this new mayor turned out to be an Elon Musk protege with the United Kingdom version of Project Doge, I don't know how to pronounce it, and the first task was to look at a staff member and woke, then maybe not a bad idea after all. Peter Connell, Lansdowne Avenue, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
This one is from George Belcher regarding roadworks, which is not surprising. It's called Near Misses. Stanmore Lane currently has roadworks at the Romsey Road entrance, meaning a one-way system is in force. It is clearly marked that you enter the estate at the end, and a diversion is in place to leave the estate via Battery Hill, or you leave and enter the estate via Battery Hill or St Cross Road. Otherwise, this is a clear accident waiting to happen. I've had three near misses because the odd driver lacks the decency to read the signs and understand there are arrows marking which way to go. A no entry sign is also clearly marked at the Stanmore Lane junction to the Minden Way. George Belcher from Stanmore.
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
And this from Councillor Liz Wynne is entitled Cart Before Horse. The Chronicle reported last week on the approval by Winchester City Council's Cabinet of a master plan for the development of the St John Moore Barracks. Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council has always supported the need for new housing, particularly that which is affordable to key workers. However, we remain concerned that the approval involves building larger, less affordable homes in three separate areas in largely untouched, nature-rich chalk grassland, officially recognised as a candidate SINC, and that's Site Important for Nature Conservation. The Parish Council has consistently raised our concern that biodiversity will be severely and unnecessarily compromised by the failure to formally recognise this area as a constraint on buildings, building works and infrastructure. The decision by the Cabinet puts the cart before the horse. Instead of agreeing to formally adopt the candidate SINC, ensuring that it has to be taken into consideration in any development plans, the housing numbers and the site outline have been predetermined within an agreed range. Similarly, the settlement gap that preserves Littleton as a village is also potentially under threat due to the number of houses that are proposed. Both of these concerns and more will be considered by the forthcoming Planning Inspectorate review of the City Council's local plan. We are encouraged to note that there are already questions being asked by the inspector about how the plan can justify the housing numbers, given the constraints that have been identified. In the meantime, we urge readers to take up opportunities to make their views known to us, to the City Council, and via the St John Moore Barracks development website. There is a grave risk to the ecology and biodiversity of this currently non-public landscape without proper protection. And that's from Councillor Liz Wynne, Chair of Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council.
Thank you, Jackie. My next letter is written by David P. Coppin. It's headed Gathering at Home of Photography. The picture you published last week of a group of photographers was taken at Laycock Abbey in Wiltshire, Bygone Hampshire Chronicle, February 27th. Highly appropriate, as it is the home of photography. I rather suspect, if they are contacted, they might be able to work out what the occasion was. It's written by David Coppin, London Road, Old Basingstoke. Deborah, please.
Sight loss. Have you heard of macular disease? Despite it being the biggest cause of sight loss in the UK, many people remain unaware of the condition and the impact it has on so many lives. Nearly 1.5 million people in the UK are living with macular disease. It's a devastating condition, often leaving those affected unable to read, drive, or recognise the faces of their loved ones. Like me, many people have no idea about macular disease and have never heard of it before until they receive a diagnosis. The Winchester Colebrook Club support group was set up to support people in and around Winchester living with sight loss, which leaves so many people feeling isolated. We meet every first Monday of the month between 2 and 4 in the afternoon at the St Lawrence Parish Room in Colebrook Street. We know losing your sight is incredibly challenging. Many people affected describe losing their sight as being similar to bereavement. But this group has been formed to provide information, encouragement and friendship to people who are affected by macular disease and other sight loss conditions to help them feel less alone. Our support group makes such a difference to people with macular disease, and we're appealing to local people who would like to join, perhaps who have macular disease themselves or would like to be a volunteer. Anyone interested in finding out more can call Macular Society Regional Manager Tyler Phillips on 07920 643 710. And that is from Tyler Phillips, the Regional Manager at the Macular Society, St Lawrence Parish Room, Cobrook Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Jackie, I think you have our last letter, please.
Oh, substandard. On February the 4th, I addressed the City Council Scrutiny Committee, raising my very serious concerns about the Council's £500,000 purchase of the Corner House Parchment Street back in January 2020. This was after I had spoken about the Corner House on a number of occasions at various other Council committees. The Council bought the building unconditionally with the intention of converting it into Council flats. This was contrary to the Council's policies, which strives to retain community assets. The Structural Engineers Report, a public document, is damning about the state to the building and clearly indicates that the conversion will essentially be a complete rebuild and therefore very expensive. Although the Council did secure planning permission, the proposed flats are awful. There is no outside space, and three of the flats are classed as substandard as they are just too small. The Council adopted a minimum space standard of 39 square metres, yet two flats are only 36 square metres, and a third is 37. How can the Council get away with breaking its own rules? When Councillor Lurney approved the purchase of the Corner House in 2020, there was a back of fag packet business case which was fundamentally flawed. Even after 5 years, the Council still hasn't prepared a proper business case, which will certainly show that the conversion is far too expensive and cannot be justified. Even worse, the building has been left to rot, with part of the sidewall collapsing onto a busy road and pavement. Everything about the purchase of the Corner House is worrying, and when the business case shows that the conversion is just too costly, what will happen to the building? With council funds being under extreme pressure, it is appalling that Winchester has wasted something in the region of £750,000 for what? And that's from Ian Tate, Romsey Road in Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we go on to editorial comment, read by Eve, please.
Successful Dean leaves on a sad note. It has been a very 21st century controversy. Perhaps, if it had happened in the last century, the furore over the departure of Winchester Cathedral Director of Music, Andrew Lumsden, last summer, would not have gained the attention that it did, courtesy of social media. But it did, and on balance, it was right that it did, because it had thrown light on the international workings of the cathedral, one of the most important institutions in this city. It is a shame that the review that investigated what has gone wrong is confidential. It makes it hard for outsiders to fully appreciate what has happened. A summary has been publicly published this week, but it leaves readers to have to read between the lines. It has led to the resignation of the Dean months before she was due to retire. One sentence from the summary stands out. The Bishop of Winchester, the RT Reverend Philip Mounston, writes, "Perhaps one of the most painful aspects of reading the entire review lies in the way it highlights the fact that actions that were not taken maliciously or with ill intent can nonetheless have seriously detrimental consequences. That is a lesson that all organisations, large and small, can take on board. And amid all the controversy, it needs to be remembered that this is a sad end for Miss Ogle to her time at Winchester. She has been a highly successful dean in many ways and will be missed.
Thank you, Eve. Now, the opinion piece this week is written by George Hayter and it's headed, "Sometimes Words Fail Me." What do you do when you're in a conversation with someone who uses a word that you don't understand? Do you interrupt and ask the person to explain what the word means? Is daring to interrupt the right thing to do? Otherwise, won't the person carry on talking in a cruelly misguided belief that you have understood every word he said? Should you keep quiet, nervous of revealing your poor education, and feeling it's best to hide the inadequacy of your vocabulary? Well, usually, I think most people do not ask. Perhaps they hide their puzzlement about meanings of words for fear of humiliating themselves. Or perhaps it's to avoid spoiling a hitherto smooth-running conversation. Querying word meanings is rare on radio and television. I can't remember ever hearing any interviewer or any interviewee daring to ask what a word means. If the public never hear important people on the radio admitting to being stumped by a word, it may make the public feel that admitting a word ignorance is best never done. I've become braver these days. If I hear an obscure word like, say, orthographic, I tend to come straight out with it. What does orthographic mean? I have found that making such an inquiry does not make people uncomfortable as long as I look confident and I don't squirm with embarrassment. Only ask if the number of people in the conversation is tiny. Anything up to about 8, and I may ask depending on how crucial the mystifying word seems. Obviously, if there are hundreds present, it would be wrong to interrupt. If I was at an audience for a speech in Winchester Guild Hall, for example, even I would not stand up and call for a word definition. If you're going to ask, ask straight away, as soon as you've heard the word you can't fathom. I mean, too often I've waited until my lingering puzzlement over a word has distracted me from properly hearing anything that's said subsequently. Excuse me. How many words do you know? Well, in the 2013 The Economist published a research suggesting that most UK native adults have a vocabulary of between 20,000 and 35,000 words. The article said most of us learn on average nearly one new word a day. That applies until middle age, after which it seems we start forgetting words faster than we learn them. We may only speak or write half the words we know. Lexicographer Susie Dent reckons that the average adult speaker understands about 40,000 words, but only uses about 20,000 of them. I find it less shaming to ask the meaning of a certain word. These easier to interrupt for words include foreign words slipped into the conversation by over-educated exhibitionists, along with their irritating snippets of Latin and Greek. Querying long words raises fewer eyebrows than short words. Technical terms and new words are usually okay to question because they baffle most of us. You can often tell a new word because many are fashioned from one or more established syllables, such as metaverse, a type of virtual world, or shoegaze, a style of rock music. Daring to ask for clarification does take up precious time, but it does also bring overwhelming benefits, I think. It rescues an unknown number of others in the conversation who also didn't have the faintest idea what the word means, and it makes a conversation participants less inclined to risk creating their own delays by using baffling words. It discourages boring linguistic pretensions and keeps discussion universally accessible. A word query reassures the speaker that at least one person is interested in what he's just said. By asking, you learn a new word and you can look forward to showing it off elsewhere. No one knows all the words. I wasn't absolutely confident about the meanings of some of the long words I put in this article. But fortunately, I have a dictionary handy. Right, we now go on to Belgarum, which, as you probably recall, is an alternative look at the news, starting with Jackie, please.
I have frying pancakes on a train. A railway historian cooked pancakes on a steam engine's boiler for Shrove Tuesday. Tim Dunn, a broadcaster and railway historian, visited the Watercress line to make the pancakes on the newly reconstructed boiler of the iconic steam engine number 35005 Canadian Pacific. His verdict on the pancakes was, not chuffing bad. The Watercress line's film of the event is a preview of the upcoming launch of the renovated SR Merchant Navy class locomotive number 35005 Canadian Pacific on Wednesday, March the 19th. The public is invited to board the newly restored steam giant, which was built in 1941 by Southern Railway at the Eastleigh Locomotive Works. The restoration of Canadian Pacific has been a 14-year project, involving more than 10,000 hours of volunteer work. The locomotive is now part of the Railway 200 campaign, celebrating 200 years of railway travel in the UK. Rebecca Daly, CEO of the Watercress line, said, "This fantastic restoration of the historic locomotive Canadian Pacific is a testament to the dedication of our volunteers and the unwavering support of our partners. The project was made possible through significant funding of £1,254,400 from the National Lottery Heritage Fund." And there's a photo of Tim Dunn cooking the pancakes. So the doors to the boiler are open. There's a sort of little metal platform clipped to the open door. You can see the roaring flames beyond. And he's got a long-handled frying pan filled with pancake batter balanced on that metal platform, holding it with what I hope is a heat-proof glove.
Thank you, Jackie. You're making me feel hungry now. Deborah, your second piece from Belgarum, please.
It's entitled Scaffolding Gets a Rustic Look. A couple of weeks ago, Belgarum reported on the corrugated iron sheeting that was protecting the scaffolding at the Guildhall. We reported how the covering was potentially deterring customers from the Shoal fish and chip shop. Now the corrugated iron, World War II Blitz look, has been replaced by a more rustic wood panelling. What next? Will the wooden boards be replaced by what? Portland stone? Anyhow, Shoal have reported no loss of trade.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, there's a lot of things to inform you about things coming on in the next week or two that you may be interested. Wednesday the 12th of March at the Discarded Nut Theatre Company, which is a youth theatre group, are presenting Frankenstein. Now, that's at the Nutshell, Winchester. Thursday the 13th, Carter Simpson will be at the Arc, Jury Street. She is known as the Queen of Oklahoma, celebrated American singer-songwriter. Also on the 13th, a rough guide to bats and bat care. That is at the Badger Farm Community Centre. Tuesday the 18th, with the Winchester Film Society at the Winchester Science Centre are presenting the film A Fire. Thursday the 20th, Tea and Treasures. Join Dutton Gregory's Wills Trust and Estate Planning team for tea and cake and a free valuation on your small treasures from home. That will be at the Winchester Cathedral at the Close, the Woodhouse Suite. Friday the 21st, Danny Driver will be playing Bach and Beyond, an exclusive series of concerts celebrating the creative genius of Johann Sebastian Bach. That's at the Turner Sims. Saturday the 22nd, Baroque Masters, a concert by the Twyford Singers. That is at St Cross Church, Back Street, Winchester. What else have we got? Oh, Friday the 4th of April, Is Verdi's Requiem is being sung by the Wainfleet Singers, and a certain person round the table is celebrating because Jackie is a member of the Wainfleet Singers. That will be conducted by Andrew Lumsden, it says here, at Winchester Cathedral. Now, if you are from Micheldeva, you might be interested that the quiz night will be at the Half Moon and Spread Eagle. It's on Tuesday, March the 18th. If you're from Sutton Scotney, you might like to know that Simon Evans will be performing his thought-provoking and funny show, Work of the Devil, at the Victoria Hall. That's Friday, March the 28th. At Itchen Abbas, at Itchen Abbas Village Hall, described as probably Mid-Hampshire's Quiz of the Year. That's on Friday, April the 11th. In Alsford, at the Methodist Church in Jacqueline's Lane, the Historical and Literary Society will be presented by Neil McLaughlin, who will speak about the Battle of Cheriton. And finally, before we go on to items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 6 a.m. and will set again at around 6:30 p.m. So on to items of general news, starting with Deborah, please.
Students celebrate Oxbridge University offers. Peter Simmons is celebrating after students received 53 offers to study at Cambridge and Oxford. The students have been offered places on a wide array of courses, including classics and English, with beginners Latin or Greek, experimental psychology, natural sciences, Spanish and linguistics, computer science, civil engineering, modern and medieval languages, as well as the more traditional subjects of history, law, mathematics, medicine and economics. The 53 offers came from 34 different colleges across the two universities, with 26 offers coming from Cambridge and 27 from Oxford. Principal Sarah Russell said, 53 Simmons students holding Oxbridge offers is nothing short of remarkable. This fantastic achievement is a testament to our students' talent, resilience and sheer hard work. It's incredibly difficult to balance the coordination and submission of a successful Oxbridge application with demanding A-level study. It takes determination, focus and a real hunger to succeed. And the article is, there's a photograph of all those students looking, all of them, very smiley.
I thought you were going to say smug there for a minute. Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
Some good news. More appointments available at GP surgeries. People in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight can now book more appointments with various healthcare professionals at GP practices. It will allow patients to be seen more quickly and receive specialised care. The appointments are not limited to GPs, but include mental health practitioners, paramedics, nurses, pharmacists, dietitians and others. A new public information campaign, It Takes a Team, is being launched by the NHS, Hampshire and Isle of Wight. The 12-month campaign will highlight the different specialists working within GP practices, spotlighting a different specialist role each month. James Roach, Director of Primary and Local Care at the NHS Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, said, "Our GPs are working harder than ever to provide care for residents in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Since the pandemic, primary care has changed significantly and GPs working differently to meet this demand. The number of appointments continues to rise, with almost 700,000 extra appointments delivered in 2024 compared to the previous year." Mr. Roach added, "We also have a wide range of specialists working in general practice. Specialists can offer more relevant advice and support. For example, a dietitian can offer ongoing nutritional help to manage a health condition, or a physiotherapist can help with rehabilitation after an arm injury."
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
Concern over barracks plans. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has criticised the plans for St John Moore Barracks, saying that it puts rare chalkland at risk. This comes after Winchester City Council approved the master plan for the site put forward by the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, at a cabinet meeting on Wednesday, February the 12th. As previously reported, the DIO master plan proposes turning the barracks into a mixed-use development with up to 1,000 homes and a park and ride. Lorna Selby, Policy and Advocacy Officer at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, said that the Trust has serious concerns about parts of the land being labelled as species-poor grassland, saying that it underestimates the ecological significance of these valuable habitats. Ms. Selby said, "Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust are keeping a close watch on plans to redevelop St John Moor Barracks to assess the likely impacts on local nature recovery. At present, concept master plans raise serious concerns for nature's recovery in Hampshire, with rare chalk grassland habitats at risk. We acknowledge that the council has been put in a difficult position following the government's planning reforms, with an increased target of 1,157 homes in the Winchester Local Authority area, representing a 71% increase. In response to these pressures, it is essential that new developments are nature-friendly to foster vibrant communities in which nature and communities can thrive. This is why we have serious concerns about the classification of certain areas as species-poor grassland in the master plan, which underestimates the ecological significance of these valuable habitats. Since the 1940s, traditionally managed wildflower-rich grasslands, such as chalk grasslands, have declined nationally by 97%. A devastating loss that is thought to have led to the drastic decline of many species, including bumblebees and butterflies. The Trust has written to Winchester City Council to highlight our concerns, and we will continue to monitor the progression of plans at this site to ensure that new development across our counties supports nature's recovery in line with the UK's legal commitments." Despite the Cabinet approving the master plan, this is separate from an outline planning application which is yet to be submitted to the council.
Thank you, Jackie. My heading piece is City of Winchester Trust 2024 Design Awards. Four projects in Winchester have been recognised for their design excellence. The City of Winchester Trust hosted its 2024 Design Awards on Tuesday, February the 25th, at the University of Winchester's West Down Centre. Excuse me. The award celebrates schemes that have met a high standard of design, contribute positively to the city, and respect the character of their surroundings. Only projects that meet these criteria are awarded, and in some years no awards are given. This year, four projects were honoured and one received a commendation. The award winners were the Handlebar Cafe, designed by Architecture PLB for Spud; Loveton Fields, designed by John Pardy Architects for HAB Housing; the Valley Stanmore, designed by Snug Architects for Winchester City Council; and the West Downs Centre, designed by Design Engine for the University of Winchester. The commendation was given to 108 Colebrook Street, designed by Rockcliffe Williams Architects for St John's. Deborah, please.
Eliza opens traditional gents' barbers in style. A new gentleman's barber offering traditional hair cutting has opened in Alsford. Walker's, run and owned by Eliza Walker, opened its doors to customers on Saturday, March the 1st in East Street. Eliza, who has previously been running a salon out of her home following the COVID-19 pandemic, said, "I qualified as a barber in 2019 and then worked in Winchester and Alton for a while. But then it was lockdown. We locked down almost straight after. And then, as soon as lockdown finished, I had been setting up a home salon. So I worked from home for about 4.5 years, and that's how I built my clients up. I wanted to move forward. I wanted to expand, and I found this place in East Street, which was perfect. It's an amazing feeling to be open. I wanted to move here to be more in the community in Alresford and to expand the way that I like to work and expand the service that I like to be for my customers. Each customer has a tailored appointment for them. Eliza said that she would not have got there without her customers, who she called loyal and supportive. She said, they're the ones who make my job fun. They're the ones who are really interesting. What I would like to get across is that this is a traditional gentleman's barber. We regard ourselves quite highly in our skills and giving a special, relaxed experience to our customers. Alongside offering haircuts, Walkers also has a podiatry clinic, which is open on Fridays, and we'll have a guest osteopath on Wednesdays. Eliza added that she wanted to thank Simon and Annabel Evans and her twin sister Lily for their help in getting the new barbers up and running. She continued, I want to thank all my customers and all the people who helped me get the shop up and running, all the tradesmen and Silk Services as well.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
Council tax up as budget approved. Winchester City Council has approved a budget for this coming year, with a council tax hike and plans to support vulnerable people with housing, improving recycling and protecting the environment. Residents will see the council tax they pay to the City Council increase by 2.7%, just under the maximum of 2.99%. It means Band D homeowners will pay an average of £2,156.76 for the 12 months from April, depending on the parish council precepts that vary. It means a Band D home will pay £163.66 to the City Council, which represents an increase of £4.30 from 2025 to 2026 from the current year. Winchester City Council's Liberal Democrat leader, Councillor Martin Todd, said, last month we agreed a council plan and this budget is delivering the council plan. We're doing it despite the challenges of local government finance and despite the impact of local government reorganisation. He added, it is undoubtedly a tough time for the local government finance. He said the council had a balanced budget for 2025 to 26 and was forecasting a balanced budget for 2026 to 2027. But by 2027 to 2028, there is set to be a £1.2 million shortfall, which he is confident will be covered in time. The officer report says the shortfall will increase to £4.46 million by 2029 to 2030, though forecasts were high because of uncertainty around what government funding there will be for 2026 to 2027. Councillor Neil Cutler, Cabinet Member for Finance and Performance, outlined the budget plans as the Council invests in greener policies. There is £460,000 investment in weekly food waste, recycling collections for all households, costing £595,000 this year. He said there is a £300,000 to help with temporary accommodation, and £1 million has been transferred from the exceptional inflation reserve to relieve the pressure on homelessness. Councillor Cutler said cuts in the government grants have left council £550,000 down in funds that it had to find. It came partly from a new payment received for packaging recycling paid by packaging providers. He said the national insurance contribution the council must pay as an employer is only partly funded by the government. This will cost £500,000, but the government will only contribute £180,000. The officer's report also said £200,000 will be invested into planning enforcement to help protect the district's communities, heritage and natural environment from harmful unauthorised development.
Thank you. Eve, Jackie, please.
Menswear shop closes. A menswear retailer in the city centre has closed its doors for good. Suave Owl at 17 High Street is the latest shop in Winchester to close its doors. It opened in Winchester in July 2023 after business owners Anthony and Jessica Harvey decided to expand their business. However, as of Tuesday, March the 4th, the shop is now shut and empty, with all stock removed. The Suave Owl website lists the shop as being closed. The company was founded in 2017 by Mr. and Mrs. Harvey to provide a range of plus-size men's fashion. Suave Owl also has a shop in Bath, which remains open. The company has been contacted for comment.
Thank you, Jackie. Now, I think we'll all enjoy the next item. It's headed Sainsbury's Blasted Over Disgusting Loo. Grime, blood and flooding. Recent reports have painted a grim picture of the facilities at Sainsbury's in Badger Farm. "It's horrible in there," said Daphne Deer, 76, of Fairdown Close. "Almost everything you look at is grimy." After two visits in just as many weeks, Daphne said there's been no improvement in the hygiene of the ladies' toilet and decided to contact the City Council's Environmental Health Department. She also recounted her experience on the community website, nextdoor.co.uk, where 43 other locals seconded her disgust. "Someone said the men's toilets are the smelliest toilets in Winchester," said Daphne. "Another man tried to go in and the floor was completely flooded." But her own account of the women's loo is enough to send a shudder down one spine. "The bins inside the ladies' toilets are absolutely disgusting," Daphne continued. "One of the bins was covered in blood. 2 weeks later, I lifted up the lid and it was still absolutely caked in blood. I mean, that's yards away from the food." She added, "They've got a long way to go to make it a hygienic place to be." A Sainsbury's spokesperson said, "Customer feedback is important to us. We have regular cleaning in place at our Badger Farm store toilets and have arranged additional cleaning to improve the condition. We are sorry for any inconvenience caused." The Chronicle has approached Winchester City Council Environmental Health Department for comment. Deborah, please.
Tale of Three Viking Girls. A new play about three Viking girls is coming to Winchester. Three Little Vikings tells the tale of three girls from a Viking village who band together to solve a variety of problems, such as disappearing chickens and a silly chieftain who won't listen to them. The play is based on a story by children's author and illustrator Bethan Woolvin and is produced by the family-friendly theatre company Wrong Semble. The company, founded in 2015, aims to create accessible theatre and art for families, schools and young people. They have a track record of engaging productions, including The Not-So-Big Bad Wolf, The Not-So-Ugly Sisters, and A Witch's Tale, the story of the life of the witch before Hansel and Gretel. Three Little Vikings is described as bold and funny adventure for rebels, focusing on themes of bravery, teamwork, and the importance of being heard. The play, suitable for children aged 3 and above, will be performed at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Saturday, March the 15th, with shows at 11:30 a.m. and 2 p.m. For more information, or to book tickets, phone the theatre, 01962 840 440.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
Work begins on 14 homes at town centre site. Work has begun to transform a 0.25 hectare site in the centre of Arlesford. Metis Homes has taken over the Brownsfield site in the Dean after it was sold to them through Savills. The site, which was previously unoccupied by 3 industrial units, will soon be replaced by a residential development of 14 flats, resident parking and a 40-space public car park. The scheme was approved unanimously by Winchester City Council's Planning Committee last July and forms part of a broader regeneration of the town centre. Metis Homes has officially named the development the 14, with a show home set to launch in early autumn. Mike Burton, land director at Metis Homes, said, "We are delighted to have secured this prime site in the heart of Arlesford and have to now... Sorry. and to have now commenced with construction. We look forward to delivering much needed new homes alongside essential public parking. Our plans will enhance the local area, providing high quality apartments that meet the needs of downsizers. Colin Wilkins, director at the Savills South Coast Development Services, said, "We are pleased to have facilitated the sale of this well-located site to Metis Homes, ensuring its regeneration aligns with Arlesford's evolving needs. This thoughtfully designed development will provide much-needed homes and improved public parking, enhancing the town centre for residents and visitors alike. We look forward to seeing Metis Homes bring this vision to life."
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
"I have broken ankle agony adds to pothole anger. As the Beatles taught us, there are 4,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire, and they are rather small. If only that were the case down here in Hampshire. According to the County Council, 180,909 potholes were fixed in the 12 months to April last year. Few people have felt the impact of this more keenly than Kieran Robertson, 48, who 6 weeks ago rolled and broke his ankle in a 2-foot-wide crater on Firmston Road in the Winnell area of Winchester. It's affected everything," Kieran said. "I haven't been able to work, I've not been able to take my daughter to school, so we've been taxiing it." Speaking of his anger at Hampshire County Council, which is responsible for the maintenance of the city's roads, he added, "It's just the fact that they won't hold their hands up. Just take some responsibility. I say we pay enough road tax and council tax." Describing the moment he hurt himself, Kieran said he got out of his car in the dark one evening, took a couple of steps and fell. "I've got a very high pain threshold, but that was just, it was agony," he said. He has had to wear a foot brace since. After the accident, Kieran and his wife Leanne, 44, who live in Kings Barton, tried to seek an explanation for why the road was in such a bad state. "We filled in an online claim form that they have on the council's website. We filled in all the pictures, all the details, where it was, etc. And they basically said that the roads here are subject to yearly inspections, and they were last inspected on March the 24th, and it was fine. They then said that someone's been out to have a look, and they basically said it's all in accordance with all of their laws and whatnot. It's not about the money, the Robertsons say, but about residents getting their money's worth for the hefty tax bill they receive each month. On the County Council's approach to repairing the roads, Kieran said, it's false economy, really, isn't it? It's like they come out, they bodge it, and then they scarper. And within a week, the tarmac's coming out because they use such cheap tarmac. The Chronicle has approached Hampshire County Council for comment."
Thank you, Jackie. Who would have thought we'd have you singing twice and celebrating the concert of the Wayne Fleet Singers? There's a story there. Right, my piece is headed Authors Line Up for Book Festival. The Winchester Book Festival is returning with a diverse lineup of events featuring some big names, including a renowned athlete and a war correspondent. This year, the event, which is returning for its third year, will take place at venues across the city from Friday, March the 25th to Sunday, April the 27th, with an extra one-off event on May the 7th with author Ben McIntyre. From best-selling authors such as Tracy Chevalier and Simon Heffer to emerging voices such as Kate Kemp and Joanna Miller, this year's festival hopes to showcase an array of literary talent across multiple genres. Other guests will include BBC International editor Jeremy Bowen and the Queen of Countdown, Susie Dent, who will be headlining as a double bill on April the 25th with Dame Kelly Holmes, discussing her life and achievements on April the 26th. Meanwhile, Tom Holland, best-selling historian and host of award-winning podcast The Rest is History, will bring the Caesars to life. And the great British Sewing Bee judge, Patrick Grant, will discuss the importance of buying less, buying better. For those interested in creative pursuits, Ben Pentreath, architectural interior designer, will discuss his work, and garden designer Pollyanna Wilkinson, Getty Royal photographer Chris Jackson, will discuss photographing the royal family for 20 years, and BBC Radio's Rob Easterway will reveal intriguing connections between Shakespeare and mathematics. The lineup also includes a number of local authors, including Soel Huzan, Nikki Smith-Dale, Carrie Cellon, and the Countess of Carnarvon. With 2025 being the 250th anniversary of the birth of Jane Austen, there will be a talk by Catherine Sutherland in conjunction with the Jane Austen House at Chawton about her new book, Jane Austen in 41 Objects. Beyond book talks and author signings, the festival will feature panel discussions, readings and storytelling sessions, providing an opportunity for audiences to connect with the writers. Festival founders Sian Searles and Sophie Lyodite said, "Winchester Books Festival is more than just a books festival, it's a space where books come alive and connect people from all ages and all walks of life. We're proud to offer a diverse programme that truly has something for everyone. We are a well-rounded festival." Tickets are now available to purchase at Winchester Books Festival, all one word, winchesterbooksfestival.com. Deborah, please.
Drinks Festival guaranteed to raise spirits. A festival celebrating rum, vodka and gin is coming to the city centre. The Gin to My Tonic Festival will be at Winchester Guildhall on Saturday, March the 15th. So you'd better hurry up. Advertised as the UK's number one gin festival, the event will bring together hundreds of different craft gins, spirits and distillers under one roof. The festival is split into two different time slots, with one running from 12 noon till 4 p.m. and the other from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. General tickets cost £17.50 each and come with an explorer guide, a glass and a tote bag, a stainless steel straw and a sampling cup. Access to hot and cold food, free samplings from on-site craft distillers and more. Meanwhile, a few VIP tickets are also available for £30. These allow access 15 minutes early, a free welcome drink, and a VIP badge entitling the holder to special offers, as well as other bonuses. The event will also feature live music and entertainment. It's strictly for the over 18s only. For more information, visit the Gin to My Tonic website.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
There's an upgrade at the City Car Park. Work has begun to upgrade the Middlebrook Street Car Park. This work will turn into a pay and display facility. This will enable Winchester City Council to provide disabled parking spaces closer to the shops, making entry and exit easier and improve traffic flow along Friarsgate. The car park will see some phase closure periods while the work is carried out. The work is part of a £1.18 million investment for parking improvements by the City Council. £305,000 will be sent to improve CCTV provision, tackling antisocial behaviour at the park and ride sites, and upgrade payment machines. A further £40,000 will be invested to improve and upgrade the multi-storey phone signal. As part of the improvements programme budget, further resurfacing works will take place at St Catherine's Park and Ride facility, alongside improved signage, enhanced cycle storage and new digital signs, supporting the Council's commitment to become a carbon neutral district by 2030. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, said, "Tackling the climate emergency and improving air quality across Winchester District while ensuring our town centres thrive underpins the significant investment we are making. Our ambitious programme of works over the coming year will improve the visitor experience by ensuring our park and ride and walk and cycle parking facilities are well maintained, safe and accessible, which supports the Winchester movement strategy.
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
Learner drivers fall victim to driving test scams. An unusually high number of reports of driving test scams have been made in Hampshire, according to a community group. Residents have been tricked into handing over hundreds of pounds for provisional driving licences, driving lessons and driving tests that do not exist, says Neighbourhood Alert. Criminals are using fake social media accounts to hoodwink unsuspecting people into handing over their money, taking advantage of the current high demand for driving tests, licences and lessons. Now the public has been warned and advised on how to spot suspicious behaviour which may be linked to the fraud. A Neighbourhood Alert spokesperson said, "We have received a high number of reports from residents in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight who have been tricked into handing over hundreds of pounds for provisional driving lessons, licences, driving lessons and driving tests that do not exist. Fake social media profiles are being set up by criminals who are taking advantage of the demand for driving lessons and the long waits for driving tests. For official advice about how to avoid all of the above, including a list of driving instructors who are approved by the Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency, DSVA, please visit gov.uk and search Finding Driving Schools and Lessons."
Thank you, Jackie. Teen knife robbery. Three teenagers robbed a boy of his clothes and phone at knife point in a Winchester park in the early hours of Sunday morning, police have said. The 17-year-old victim was threatened in Somers Close Recreation Ground, Stanmore, and handed over his trainers, hat, tracksuit and mobile phone. Police arrested two 18-year-olds and a 17-year-old on suspicion of robbery. The younger boy was also arrested on suspicion of possession of a knife in a public place. All three have been released on bail. Police spokesperson said, "We were called at 4:31 a.m. on Sunday, February the 23rd, with reports that a 17-year-old boy had been robbed in Somers Close Recreation Park. The boy was threatened with a knife and had items stolen from him, including trainers, a hat, tracksuit clothing items and a phone. Police have managed to locate some of the stolen property and have also made three arrests. Two 18-year-old men and a 17-year-old boy were arrested by police on suspicion of robbery, and the 17-year-old was also arrested on suspicion of possession of a knife in a public place. They have been bailed with conditions until May the 23rd, while the investigation continues." Deborah, please.
A man in his 70s was seriously hurt in a crash. He's been taken to hospital in a serious condition after a car crash near the RHCH in Winchester. At around midday on Wednesday, February the 26th, a Mitsubishi Colt and a Peugeot Partner crashed on Queen's Road, which circumnavigates the city's hospital. Traffic built up on Romsey Road after the police closed the road, backing up to the Upper High Street. The Peugeot driver was treated at the scene before being taken to hospital. A police spokesman said, "We were called shortly after midday today, Wednesday, February the 26th, to a report of a two-vehicle road traffic collision on Queen's Road, Winchester. The two vehicles involved in the collision were a Peugeot Partner and a Mitsubishi Colt. The occupant of the Peugeot Partner, a man aged in his 70s, was treated at the scene and has been taken to hospital in a serious condition. No other injuries were reported as a result of the collision."
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
City Brit winner tells of honour and gratitude. A Winchester musician who is a member of one of the world's most recognisable bands spoke at the Brit Awards at the O2 Arena in London after her group scooped a top accolade. Georgia Davies, who plays a bass for The Last Dinner Party and has been described as shy, took to the microphone at the event, hosted by Jack Whitehall, praising her bandmates, family, friends and colleagues after the band was announced as the winner of Best New Artist category. "Oh my God," said Davies, who went to the Henry Beaufort School and the Peter Simmons Sixth Form College. "This is truly the biggest honour of our lives," she continued. "We won the Rising Star last year, and it means so much to come back and win this award against such incredible competition. We want to thank literally everyone we've ever met, including all of our team, our friends, our family, but most importantly, our parents. We'd also like to thank one person in particular, our incredible producer for this record, the incomparable James Ford. That man can really make a record, and he did an incredible job on ours. We just wanted to send him so much love because he's amazing. I want to say thank you to our beautiful drummer, Casper, as well. He is the best. We love him so, so much. Davies also talked about the UK's music scene, warning that independent venues must be supported if it is to thrive. She said, "And one more thing, we wouldn't be a band without the UK's incredible independent venues. And they are the lifeblood of the music industry, and they are dying. And if venues like this, like the O2, like arena stadiums across the country, contributed even a tiny bit more towards these independent venues, then we would not be losing them at this alarming rate. We wouldn't be here without them. None of this would be happening without them. And so I want to say to those artists who are playing independent venues all over the country tonight, keep going, because that's the best kind of art there is. And in a time where art is under threat, that is the most important thing, to keep supporting. So thank you so much for the award. We love you and we can't believe it. I'm shaking like a leaf." And there is a picture of her with her band in some Victorian style costumes. I see some corsets. And yes, a picture of presenter Jack Whitehall underneath, who awarded them.
Thank you. What an extraordinary title for a band. Say it again.
The Last Dinner Party.
The Last Dinner Party. Yes. I have seen them on the television.
Yes.
I thought, what an extraordinary name to come up with.
They're a very good band, actually.
It was good. Absolutely. Yes. Right, Jackie, please.
Ooh, well, bringing the mood down. I have... Stranger took photos of woman in city street. A man took pictures of a woman in Winchester and followed her into an alleyway before being chased off by a member of the public, police have said. At around 7:30 a.m. on Tuesday, February the 25th, the man followed the woman closely in Stanmore as she walked near the train track in the Cromwell Road and Airlie Corner area. He was then challenged by another man who had seen the incident before running off. Now the police would like to speak to the man who confronted him, or anyone else who witnessed the incident. A police spokesperson said, "We're appealing for witnesses to a suspicious incident which happened in the Stanmore area of Winchester between 7:25 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. on the Tuesday, the 25th of February. It's reported that a woman was followed by a man as she walked in the Cromwell Road and Airlie Corner area. The man was taking photos of her and followed her closely in the direction of the alleyway that runs parallel to the train track. A male member of the public spotted this and challenged the man before the man ran off. Were you the member of the public who stopped to help? Please get in touch with us to tell us what you saw. We are also keen to hear from anyone else who has information that may assist our inquiries or who has experienced similar behaviour in the Airlie Corner and Cromwell Road areas. Anyone with information is asked to contact police on 101.
Thank you, Jackie. This piece is headed City Blow as Another Shop Shuts Its Doors. Winchester City Centre is set to suffer the closure of yet another independent business, the third on the same street in under 12 months. Cupboard of Health on Parchment Street is selling all of its products at half price as it prepares to shut, citing low footfall and a lack of support from the local authority. Amy Taylor, who works at the health food shop, said, "It's a shame. We don't feel as though Winchester City Council shows any concern or support for independent businesses. Moreover, shopping trends have evolved in a way that cuts out the city's small retailers. Basically, everything is going online," said Amy. "People like getting a takeaway coffee and browsing around the shops. What they don't do is buy anything in the shops. They go, oh, I like that. Oh, I see if I can find it cheaper online. We've had customers come in, pick up our brains on health advice for 45 minutes and be like, so which product would you recommend? Oh, right, thank you. Okay, I'll have a think about it. I might just take a photo of it so I don't forget. And then they walk out and you never see them again. And you know that's what they bought the product online. This, Amy thinks, does not bode well for the future of the city centre. Winchester is becoming restaurants or service providers. You can't actually buy anything anymore. And Winchester High Street, well, Winchester Town Centre is just going to become a very boring place. Deborah, please.
Tools theft from garages. A garage complex in Winchester neighbourhood was broken into and items stolen, police have said. A number of garages on Eldest Close, Badger Farm, were forcibly entered on the evening of February the 24th. Some tools were stolen from one of the units. Police are investigating the incident and have asked those with any information to come forward. A police spokesperson said some tools were reported stolen from one of the garages. Anyone with information about this incident is asked to contact the police on 101.
Thank you, Deborah. Eve, please.
There's still a chance for your say on National Park Future. The deadline for a major public consultation on the future of the National Park is approaching. The local plan review, which will guide development in the National Park and address critical issues like nature recovery, climate change, affordable housing and community sport, is set to close for comments on March the 17th. So far, the public has made more than 600 comments, with over 400 submitted via the online consultation platform and another 200 by email or post. Over 800 people attended the consultation events in January and February across Sussex and Hampshire. Claire Tester, Planning Policy Manager for the National Park Authority, said, "We have had a really good response to the consultation, and I'd like to thank everyone who has taken the time to give their feedback. This is the main opportunity for people to help shape the final plan, so it's really important that you care about the future of the National Park, that you take part in the consultation. Probably the easiest way to submit comments is through the online platform, so we encourage everyone, both inside and outside of the National Park, to have their say if they can. The National Park Authority plans to retain much of the current local plan, including the landscape-led approach, which ensures that the nationally designed landscape is considered in every planning decision. The plan will continue to prioritise clean air, water, dark skies and food, with medium levels of growth distributed across the towns and villages of UK's youngest national park. The review document also includes 55 existing policies that have been updated, as well as 8 new thematic policies. Changes involve strengthening climate, nature and green infrastructure policies, increased protection for water resources and more policies around viticulture and regenerative tourism, given their importance to the South Downs economy. 28 existing local plan site allegations have not yet been implemented and will be carried out into the local plan review. Some of the changes to wording or site areas. The review also proposes 48 new site allocations across Hampshire, West Sussex and East Sussex. Public feedback will help shape the next version of the local plan, which will be published in 2026 ahead of its submission for the examination by the independent inspector. Once the new local plan is adopted in 2027, it will be used to help decide all planning applications in the National Park. And there is aerial footage of the South Harting village in South Downs.
Thank you, Eve. Jackie, please.
Most get their school choices. More than 97% of parents in Hampshire have been offered a place for their child at one of their 3 preferred secondary schools for September 2025. Of those who applied for a Year 7 place by the application deadline, 90.8% have been offered a place at their first preference school. The County Council received 14,230 on-time applications this year, a decrease of 357 applications compared to the number received for places in September 2024, which was 14,587. Councillor Steve Forster, Executive Member for Education, said, "I'm grateful to our school's admission team for continuing to do a great job in finding places at parents' preferred schools."
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. And would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, excuse me. And of course, many thanks to my readers, Deborah.
Goodbye.
Eve.
Bye, thank you.
Thank you. But Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until the next time, goodbye.